Section 3, African American Culture, An American Story. On August 8, 1922, a young cornet player named Louis Armstrong took the train from New Orleans to Chicago. His hero, the bandleader Joe King Oliver, had sent a telegram to Armstrong offering him a job. Here, Armstrong recalls his trip. "When I got to the station in Chicago, I couldn't see Joe Oliver anywhere. I'd never seen a city that big. All those tall buildings, I thought they were universities. I said, 'No, this is the wrong city.' I was just fixing to take the next train back home when a red cap, a train porter, Joe, had left word and came up to me. He took me to the Lincoln Gardens, and when I got to the door there and heard Joe and his band wailing so good, I said to myself, 'No, I ain't supposed to be in this band. They're too good.'" The next night, near the end of the show, Oliver let Armstrong perform a solo. Armstrong later recalled his feelings. "I had hit the big time. I was up north with the greats. I was playing with my idol, the king, Joe Oliver. My boyhood dream had come true at last." Quoted in the African American Family Album. The Harlem Renaissance. Louis Armstrong's first impressions of Chicago and his desire to fulfill a dream were probably similar to the first impressions and desires of hundreds of thousands of other African Americans who joined in what was called the Great Migration from the rural South to industrial cities in the North. By moving north, African Americans sought to escape the segregated society of the South, to find economic opportunities, and to build better lives. After World War I, black populations swelled in large northern cities. The cities were full of nightclubs and music, particularly in the New York City neighborhood of Harlem, the heart and soul of the African American Renaissance. It was there that African Americans created an environment that stimulated artistic development, racial pride, a sense of community, and political organization. The result was a flowering of African American arts that became known as the Harlem Renaissance. The writers. Considered the first important writer of the Harlem Renaissance, Claude McKay emigrated from Jamaica to New York. There he translated the shock of American racism into Harlem Shadows, a collection of poetry published in 1922. In such poems as The Lynching and If We Must Die, McKay's eloquent verse expressed a proud defiance and bitter contempt of racism, two striking characteristics of Harlem Renaissance writing. One of the most prolific, original, and versatile writers of the Harlem Renaissance was Langston Hughes. Born in Joplin, Missouri, Hughes became a leading voice in the African-American experience in the United States. Harlem Renaissance authors continue to influence writers today. Zora Neale Hurston published her first novels, Jonas Gourdvine and Their Eyes Were Watching God, in the 1930s. These works influenced such contemporary authors as Ralph Ellison and Toni Morrison. Hurston's personal and spirited portrayals of rural African-American culture, often set in Florida where she grew up, were also the first major stories featuring African-American females as central characters. Other notable writers of the Harlem Renaissance include County Cullen, Aylin Locke, Dorothy West, and Nella Larson. Jazz, blues, and the theater. Shortly after Louis Armstrong arrived in Chicago from New Orleans, he introduced an improvisational early form of jazz, a style of music influenced by Dixieland music and ragtime, with its ragged rhythms and syncopated melodies. In 1925, 3 years after joining Joe King Oliver's band, Armstrong awed fellow musicians with a series of recordings made with his group, the Hot Five. In these recordings, especially in the song Cornet Chop Suey, Armstrong broke away from the New Orleans tradition of ensemble or group playing by performing highly imaginative solos. He became the first great cornet and trumpet soloist in jazz music. Ragtime also influenced the composer, pianist, and band leader Duke Ellington, who listened as a teenager to ragtime piano players in Washington, D.C. In 1923, Ellington formed a small band, moved to New York, and began playing in speakeasies and clubs. He soon created his own sound, a blend of improvisation and orchestration, using different combinations of instruments. The Ellington style appeared in such hits as Mood Indigo and Sophisticated Lady. Like many other African-American entertainers, Ellington got his start at the Cotton Club, one of the most famous Harlem night spots. Years later, reflecting on the music of this era, Ellington said, "Everything, and I repeat, everything had to swing. And that was just it. Those cats really had it. They had that soul. And you know, you can't just play some of this music without soul. Soul is very important." Bessie Smith seemed to symbolize soul. Her emotional singing style and commanding voice earned her the title of the Empress of the Blues. Smith sang of unfulfilled love, poverty, and oppression, the classic themes of the blues, a soulful style of music that evolved from African-American spirituals. Born in Tennessee, Smith started performing in tent shows, saloons, and small theaters in the South. Discovered by Ma Rainey, one of the first great blues singers, Smith later performed with many of the greatest jazz bands of the era, including those of Louis Armstrong, Fletcher Henderson, and Benny Goodman. Her first recorded song, Downhearted Blues, became a major hit in 1923. While jazz and blues filled the air during the Harlem Renaissance, the theater arts were also flourishing. Shuffle Along, the first musical written, produced, and performed by African Americans, made its debut on Broadway in 1921. The show's success helped launch a number of careers, including those of Florence Mills and Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson, a celebrated singer and actor, received wide acclaim in the title role of a 1924 New York production of Emperor Jones, a play by Eugene O'Neill. In 1928, Robeson gained fame for his work in the musical Showboat. He also often appeared at the Apollo Theater, another famous entertainment club in Harlem. Robeson's fame ultimately spread to Europe, where he became well known as a singer and actor. Perhaps the most daring performer of the era, Josephine Baker, transformed a childhood knack for flamboyance into her career as a well-known singer and dancer. Baker performed on Broadway but went to Paris to dance in 1925. Baker took Paris by storm, launching an international career. The Harlem Renaissance succeeded in bringing international fame to African-American arts. It also sparked a political transformation in the United States. Reading check. Analyzing. Analyze how African Americans helped shape the national identity through the use of music and literature. African American politics. The racial pride that sparked the artistic achievements of the Harlem Renaissance also fueled the political and economic aspirations of many African Americans. The post-war years saw the development of new attitudes among African Americans, who forged new roles in life and in politics. For many, the sight of the 1,300 African American men of the 15th Regiment of New York's National Guard, returning from the war and marching through Manhattan and home to Harlem, symbolized these aspirations. W.E.B. Du Bois, editor of The Crisis, captured the new sense of dignity and defiance of African Americans. We return. We return from fighting. We return fighting. Make way for democracy. We saved it in France, and by the great Jehovah, we will save it in the United States of America, or know the reason why. From When Harlem Was in Vogue. The Black Vote in the North. The Great Migration had a significant impact on the political power of African Americans in the North. As their numbers grew in certain city neighborhoods, African Americans became a powerful voting bloc that could sometimes sway the outcome of elections. At election time, most African American voters in the North cast their votes for Republicans, the party of Abraham Lincoln. In 1928, African American voters in Chicago achieved a significant political breakthrough. Voting as a bloc, they helped elect Oscar DePriest, the first African-American representative in Congress from a northern state. During his three terms in Congress, DePriest introduced laws to provide pensions to formerly enslaved African-Americans over 75 years old, to declare Lincoln's birthday a public holiday, and to fine and imprison officials who allowed lynchings of prisoners. The NAACP battles lynching. On the legal front, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP, battled valiantly, but often unsuccessfully, against segregation and discrimination against African Americans. Its efforts focus primarily on lobbying public officials and working through the court system. From its beginning in 1909, the NAACP lobbied and protested against the horrors of lynching. The NAACP's persistent efforts led to the passage of anti-lynching legislation in the House of Representatives in 1922. The Senate defeated the bill, but the NAACP continued to lobby against lynching throughout the 1920s and 1930s. Its ongoing efforts kept the issue in the news and probably helped to reduce the number of lynchings that took place. One of the NAACP's greatest political triumphs occurred in 1930 with the defeat of Judge John J. Parker's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. The NAACP joined with labor unions to launch a highly organized national campaign against the North Carolina judge, who allegedly was racist and anti-labor. By a narrow margin, the Senate refused to confirm Parker's nomination. His defeat demonstrated that African American voters and lobby groups had finally begun to achieve enough influence to affect national politics and change decisions in Congress. While some people were fighting for integration and improvement in the economic and political position of African Americans, other groups began to emphasize black nationalism and black pride. Eventually, some began to call for black separation from white society. Black nationalism and Marcus Garvey. A dynamic black leader from Jamaica, Marcus Garvey captured the imagination of millions of African Americans with his call for Negro nationalism, which glorified the black culture and traditions of the past. Inspired by Booker T. Washington's call for self-reliance, Garvey founded the Universal Negro Improvement Association, or UNIA, an organization aimed at promoting black pride and unity. The central message of Garvey's Harlem-based movement was that African Americans could gain economic and political power by educating themselves. Garvey also advocated separation and independence from whites. In 1920, at the height of his power, Garvey presided over an international conference in the UNIA Liberty Hall in Harlem. After the convention, about 50,000 people, led by Garvey, marched through the streets of Harlem in a show of support. Garvey told his followers they would never find justice or freedom in America, and he proposed to lead them to Africa. Garvey's plan to create settlement in the African country of Liberia alarmed France and Great Britain, which governed surrounding territories. In the United States, the emerging African-American middle class and intellectuals distanced themselves from Garvey and his push for racial purity and separation. FBI officials saw UNIA as a dangerous catalyst for black uprisings in urban areas. Garvey also alienated key figures of the Harlem Renaissance by characterizing them as weak-kneed and cringing, flatterers of the white men. Garvey was convicted of mail fraud in 1922 and served 2 years in prison. Since he had never become an American citizen, his felony conviction required that he be deported, and he was returned to Jamaica. Garvey's subsequent attempts to revitalize his movement from abroad failed. Despite Garvey's failure to keep his movement alive, he inspired millions of African Americans with a sense of pride in their heritage and hope for the future. That sense of pride and hope survived long after Garvey and his Back to Africa movement was gone. This pride and hope reemerged strongly during the 1950s and played a vital role in the civil rights movement of the 1960s. Reading check. Summarizing. How did World War I change attitudes among African Americans toward themselves and their country? American literature. Langston Hughes was born in Joplin, Missouri in 1902. After high school, Hughes went on to Columbia University to study engineering, but he soon dropped out to pursue his first love, poetry. Hughes eventually became known as the Poet Laureate of Harlem. The following poems are representative of Hughes' works. In I Too Sing America, he describes the disenfranchisement of many African Americans felt in the United States in the 1920s and their willingness to stand up and take pride in their heritage. In The Negro Speaks of Rivers, Hughes reveals a profound love of his heritage. Selected poems by Langston Hughes. The Negro Speaks of Rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood and human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I too sing America. I too sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, "Eat in the kitchen," then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I too am America. Analyzing Literature. 1. Recall and interpret. How do you think Hughes's use of punctuation and line breaks helps convey his point? 2. Evaluate and connect. Do you think these poems convey a positive message or a negative one? Why? Interdisciplinary activity. Response writing. The poem "I Too Sing America" is a response to Walt Whitman's poem "I Hear America Singing." Using the internet or other resources, find and read Whitman's poem. In small groups, try to figure out how Hughes's poem ties to Whitman's. Then write your own response poem to "I Hear America Singing." Time Notebook. The Jazz Age, 1920 to 1929. Appreciation. Louis Daniel Armstrong. Writer Stanley Crouch remembers Louis Armstrong, a Jazz Age great. Pops. Sweet Papa Dip, Satchmo. He had perfect pitch and perfect rhythm. His improvised melodies and singing could be as lofty as a moon flight or as low down as the blood drops of a street thug dying in the gutter. The extent of his influence across jazz and across American music continues to this day. Not only do we hear Armstrong in trumpet players who represent the present renaissance in jazz, we can also detect his influence in certain rhythms that sweep from country and western music to rap. Louis Daniel Armstrong was born in New Orleans on August 4, 1901. It was at a home for troubled kids that young Louis first put his lips to the mouthpiece of a cornet and later a trumpet. In 1922, Armstrong went to Chicago, where he joined King Oliver and his Creole jazz band. The band brought out the people and all the musicians, black and white, who wanted to know how it was truly done. When he first played in New York City in 1924, his improvisation set the city on its head. The stiff rhythms of the time were slashed away by his combination of the percussive and the soaring. He soon returned to Chicago, perfected what he was doing, and made one record after another. Louis Armstrong was so much, in fact, that every school of jazz since has had to address how he interpreted the basics of the idiom, swing, blues, ballads, and Afro-Hispanic rhythms. His freedom, his wit, and his discipline give his music a perpetual position in the wave of the future that is the station of all great art. Verbatim. The great creators of the government thought of America as a light to the world, as created to lead the world in the assertion of the right of peoples and the rights of free nations. Woodrow Wilson in defense of the League of Nations, 1920. We seek no part in directing the destinies of the old world. Warren G. Harding, inaugural address, 1921. Here was a new generation, dedicated more than the last to the fear of poverty and the worship of success, grown up to find all wars fought, all faiths in man shaken. F. Scott Fitzgerald, author, This Side of Paradise. There has been a change for the worse during the past year in feminine dress, dancing, manners, and general moral standards. One should realize the serious ethical consequences of immodesty in girls' dress. From the Pittsburgh Observer. In New York, I saw 7 million two-legged animals penned in an evil-smelling cage, streets as unkempt as a Russian steppe, rubbish, waste paper, cigar butts. One glance and you know no master hand directs. Article in Soviet newspaper Pravda describing New York City in 1925. Hide the hooch. Ingenious Americans are finding unusual places to store their liquor under prohibition. Canes, hot water bottles, shoe heels, rolled newspaper, folds of coats, perfume bottles. Milestones. Embarrassed, 1920. Texas Senator Morris Shepherd, a leading proponent of the 18th Amendment, when a large whiskey still is found on his farm. Erased, 1922. The word obey from the Episcopal marriage ceremony by a vote of American Episcopal bishops. Died, 1923. Homer Morehouse, 27, in the 87th hour of a record-setting 90-hour, 10-minute dance marathon. Exonerated, 1921. 8 Chicago White Sox players charged with taking bribes to throw the 1919 World Series. The players were found not guilty when grand jury testimony disappeared. Newly appointed Commissioner of Baseball Kennesaw Mountain Landis banned the Black Sox from baseball. Making a comeback, Santa Claus, after falling into low favor in the last decade. Aiming at children, advertisers are marketing St. Nick heavily. Numbers. 60,000. Families with radios in 1922. 9 million. Motor vehicles registered in U.S. in 1920. 2,467,946 dollars. Income tax paid by Henry Ford in 1924. 500,000. People who wrote to Henry Ford in 1924 begging for money. 33.5. Number of hours Charles Lindbergh spent in his nonstop flight from New York to Paris on May 20, 1927. 1,800. Tons of ticker tape and shredded paper dropped on Charles Lindbergh in his parade in New York City. $16,000. Cost of cleaning up after the parade. $7,000. Job offers received by Lindbergh. 3.5 million. Number of letters received by Lindbergh.